Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timmeri. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri on Relevant Radio.
So, who won the Super Bowl? I'm not going to lie, up until Lucas, stop shaking your head at me. Stop shaking your head at me. Okay, up until maybe about half an hour ago, I do not know who won the Super Bowl. Because I'm packing, I'm moving. We bought a house and escrow's closing this week. And I knew I was missing something this weekend. You know, when my husband pulled into the shopping center where Costco was and we divided and conquered, he went to Costco, I went other places. You know, I still missed it because he went to Costco. The poor man, I sent him alone into Costco on the Saturday afternoon before the Super Bowl. That is rough. I'm just saying that is rough. Anyways, I didn't realize that's where we were headed and on the day in which we were headed. But I finally learned who won the Super Bowl. And although I will be perfectly honest, I have never, ever gotten into football. I think the 2 or 3 times that one of my dear friends growing up tried to explain football to me, I fell asleep. Like, legitimate fell asleep. I don't understand the game. So that's on me. I've never gotten into it. But here's the deal. Here's what's great about the Super Bowl. And no, it's not the halftime show. I think I've really been over the whole halftime show since, what's her face, Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake pulled that whole Shabille, you remember? Anyways, I digress. I think that's the last time I really, really paid attention to the halftime show. And although people watch it for the halftime show, I think that we don't pay as much attention as we did. I don't, maybe you do, but let's be real. There are two things. If you're not a football fan, maybe 3 things that you're really there for. 1, we love to be on a winning team, okay? We love to be on a winning team, so even if we're not fans of football, we pick a team and we put our support behind that team because we love to see winners. 2, really, the big deal is the food. And come on, I knew I was missing something this weekend, and what I was missing was the food. Okay, I knew I should have made those brownies on Sunday. Like, something in my heart said, don't wait for Valentine's Day. You should be making them today. I knew I deserved a treat. It wasn't a feast day, but it was Super Bowl. I digress. Okay, but the third thing is, I think one of the real reasons, and I know for me, and I think this is for a lot of people, why we love the Super Bowl as a nation is because of the quality time with friends and family. That time together, you may care less about who the actual team is, but you can get behind and vote and root for someone and have fun doing it together. We can all pitch in, make food. Come on, you get some of the best foods ever at Super Bowl because you get to eat most of the food with your hands. And how many vegetables do you really eat on Super Bowl day? Not many. Unless you're really one of those people who actually eats the celery and carrots with the wings, which I am not, unless there's like a really excellent ranch dip. But I can't even have ranch dip. I'm allergic to dairy. So, I mean, these vegan options for ranch just don't hold it up against normal. Anyways, I digress. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri. We're going to talk about why quality time and spending that time together is a fundamental part of our nation's celebration of the Super Bowl. And I think this is important within the context of the conversation of friendship. So stay tuned. We're also going to talk about what's happening at the Olympics and kind of the approach of some of our Olympic athletes in the face of failure. All of us face failure in our lives. What can we learn from our athletes? Joining me now is Father Tim Grumbach. Father Tim Grumbach is the chaplain at Bishop Alemany High School in the Diocese of Los Angeles, a good longtime friend of us here at Trending. And we're going to talk about the new Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, that is coming out this coming fall on Amazon Prime. I also want to dive into the story behind the Rams player Cooper Kupp. You may know him. He is from the LA Rams. Again, I'm not a Super Bowl fan, but I was really interested in his story. And Father Tim, I know you really like his story and the story with his wife Anna. So fill us in here about Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, it's a good day to be in Los Angeles. It's a good week to be in Los Angeles. I've been thinking for the last few days.
All we do is
all we do is collect trophies. You know,
we'll take it.
The Lakers and the Dodgers within the last couple years won championships. The Kings were not too many years ago in hockey, and now we have the Rams bringing a Super Bowl trophy back to LA, and it's pretty exciting. But it's also a little bit bittersweet for me because I am going to do a wedding in Cincinnati in a couple months. And I was kind of thinking like, oh no, they're going to be like, this priest from Los Angeles is coming. I hope they don't harbor too many grudges. And I think it would have been pretty exciting to go to Cincinnati still in the afterglow of a Super Bowl championship. But I think they have many years ahead of them with that opportunity.
We can't help it that we have amazing athletes. And I still identify as a Californian. If you have a problem with my identity politics today, that's okay. I will always identify as a Californian.
Yeah, and to root for the Rams is a complicated thing here in Los Angeles because they were here before and then they left and they went to St. Louis and they won a championship there, and now they're back and they won a championship for us now. But they left at a really formative time in my life, and like, this is kind of a deep thing because it's like, you know, sports is a really important thing in my family, and to have, you know, praise God, my family is just really blessed. And if I can say like the greatest sense of abandonment I've felt has been my sports teams, then that's a huge blessing. But the Raiders and the Rams were both football teams in LA at the same time. And my family, honestly, we leaned a little bit more towards the Raiders. But, you know, this was a time in my life where, like, they left. And I was just like, okay, I can't trust another football team. And so I didn't really love either the Rams or the Raiders after that. And it felt like I was in a home with no team. So for the Rams to come back and so quickly to prove themselves, I was like, the Rams have to do a lot for me to love them. And I think this is a good step forward, to be honest. But you know, all joking aside,
you're one of those. You only jumped on the winning team, Father Tim.
Hey, I bleed Dodger blue, and so I know what it means to be
Anaheim
loyal
Angels.
to a sports team.
We still call them. We still call them the Anaheim Angels. I still can't believe. See, I love baseball. Yeah. That's a whole other conversation. I get that game.
Oh,
football,
yeah.
Don't understand it. But let's talk a little bit about Cooper Kupp, because a lot of people, I think many people, aren't just interested in Cooper, but in his wife, Anna, as well. So tell us a little bit about his story and why you like his story so much.
Yeah, whenever he would come on the screen, you know, you'd hear the coo. You know, it sounds like they're booing him, but they're saying his name, as my dad would always say about people who have names that sound like that. Is that they boo him because they love him, and so he's kind of this breakout star over the last year. And that article that I sent you, Tim Marie, I was kind of laughing as I was reading through it. It's like there's so many sports stats here and little details like what people would call inside baseball, even though it's football. That, you know, it might not interest a lot of people, all these statistics and everything, but to understand his breakout career, just to see kind of like his, how he was recruited out of high school, into college, it was, you know, not recruited very much at all. I believe he went to Eastern Washington University, which is probably most famous because it has a red football field. And so to have a player like that come out of that, It's a good program, but it's not, you know, one of the bigger programs in the nation. And so for him to come out and then to have a season like he did, you know, he had like one breakout game and then everybody was like, oh, wow, this guy's, you know, great for a game. And then it just game after game after game. And so the statistics side of it says, well, he had more receptions, more touchdowns, And oh gosh, I think maybe more receiving yards than anyone else during this year. He was the offensive player of the year and ended up being the Super Bowl MVP. And that, you know, all that statistics, the sports side of it is amazing. But what really interests me about Cooper Kupp is the story of his family and the story of his wife. And they met in college. And it wasn't very long after they met that they got married. Oh, they met in high school. Yeah. And so they were married while they were in college. And what really struck me about the article is, you know, the people asking, you know, why so soon? Are you worried about missing the college experience as a single man and as a single woman? You know, why did you guys get married so young? Yeah. And she, Anna, his wife, is saying, you know, we really think the opposite. Like, we're just so glad that we found each other as young as we did. And I think that's such a beautiful message for people discerning marriage out there, is that, you know, sometimes you think, oh, I have to have it figured out. I have to have everything planned out and then I can get married. And they're saying, you know, that's not the goal here. The goal here is to get married and figure it out together. And you can really see the way that, you know, people tell stories about them, their relationship, and how it's not just about them. You know, Cooper's fellow players, his teammates, are like, she's amazing and she makes him who he is. And it's just so beautiful to see the way that they have supported each other through this journey. So that was one of the things that really struck me, is the how young they were when they got married and how they said, you know, this is what we wanted.
And it's interesting as a culture that we really see the truth of the matter. And if you're a parent and you ever think, you know, oh yeah, my kid's going to college to learn, like, yes, they may be going to college to learn, but the attitude and the assumption, and it can be from parents as well as the college student themselves, that, you know, you're there to sow your wild oats and get it out of your system then, but that's a really expensive sowing of your oats when you think about it. And it's funny because here's that response to Anna and her husband as they get married at the end of their sophomore year. And yet when we actually hear their story, when they're asked, like you mentioned, like, they're glad. They think that, you know, other people essentially were missing out. But what's fascinating is one of Cooper's high school best friends talks a little bit about Anna, and he mentions that she expects a lot out of the people around her and has a kind of high threshold of excellence and expectation, and that because of this, Cooper worked harder. And I thought that that was a really great example of what we're called to, both in friendship and in marriage, that we should have high expectations, that we should actually have a really high threshold for what we expect from one another, not asking for perfection, but always calling one another into our missions and into the gifts and talents we have. You know, I imagine as a wife and now as a mother that she's called him not only out to really support him in his work, because if you follow the story, she was there working while they were in college to support them so that he could stay focused on his football career. And she was working on helping him to eat right and exercise. You know, they were a team and they continue to be today. And I think that that example, Father Tim, is a really good reminder for us that we all may not be athletes, but we're called to call one another out in our friendships and marriage to excellence.
Yes, and they focus together so much on his career. And it's a beautiful thing to see, you know, the sacrifices they both make to get to where he is now. And he knows it's not only his effort. But one of the most beautiful moments in the article is right near the end, where she's quoted as, you know, saying how she's so proud of him. And she says, I'm proud of you when you wake up at 2 a.m. to go rock our kid. Proud of you when you wake up at 4 a.m. to go watch film. And I'm proud of you when you break NFL records. And so it's this beautiful image of that. She's not just proud of him because he's famous or anything like that. She sees him in those private moments where he's being a dad. And that's something that she is proud of probably the most, because it's the first thing that she said. And that we got to witness that on, you know, on TV, and for those who got to go to the stadium, is it was so beautiful to see the families of the players on the field afterwards. I know Matthew Stafford, the quarterback for the Rams, had his kids on the field, and they were playing in the confetti, and the reporters are trying to get a hold of the, you know, of Stafford and Kupp, and they're like shooing them off, like, I'm having a moment here with my kids, okay? I know you're my job, but this is my family. And it was really heartwarming to see the kids have their dads there with them. I'm sure their dads, as football players, as NFL players, the best in the world, made so many sacrifices, and they missed their dads so much, I'm sure, that their dads were like, this is the most important thing right now. And you could see all of that playing out. And so, my favorite images weren't what was happening during the game, as awesome as that was, but it was what was happening after the game to see them be families together again.
It's so neat to see these stories when they come to life. And I think that that's often why people love players. They look at people as role models, and we want to know about their family. We want to know their ups and their downs. And it's a reminder that as a culture, we have to watch who our heroes are, but also, be ready to scrutinize as well as raise up them and support them in their sorrow and in their triumph. But one thing that really stood out to me coming back to Cooper Kupp's wife, Anna, it makes me think of how it's said that she had such a high expectation. She helped support them as they were married through college. And really what we see is this drawing out of his talent. She saw his talent. She saw his potential. And she encouraged and challenged him in excellence. And St. Edith Stein, also known as St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, she died during World War II in Auschwitz. She is known as a great philosopher, and she talks a lot about women. And one of the things she discusses, Father Tim, is how women are in part meant to help identify the gifts and the talents in other people, and that it's a feminine trait to help draw not just the good of the human person, but also the good talents, their capabilities out in them so that the person doesn't atrophy. It's so easy, I think, for us as a culture, for us as individuals, but especially I would say for our men, to maybe not always see their fullest potential, and that this is a gift that we as women have to help see the potential from, our children to our spouses to other people in the culture, and to encourage that and foster that.
Yeah, and one of my favorite quotes comes from Edith Stein about a woman's soul being fashioned as a shelter under which other souls can unfold. And I love that. It's this beautiful motherly vocation. And just to get to see that, with so many TV shows and other stories, just focusing so much on the brokenness of families. And, not to idolize this family before us or to assume that they're perfect, but that even ESPN is telling a story like this. It's refreshing.
It is refreshing. And let's speak a little bit. I know that they are a family of faith. Can you speak a little bit to their faith journey?
Yeah. What really drew me to this and made me want to talk about this was a tweet, actually, that Cooper had sent out immediately after the game. I mean, you look at the time on it, and it's like he must have maybe even still on the field or something like that. And it says, "Do it to get a crown that will last forever," and that's referring to St. Paul writing to the Corinthians and referring to this. Many run the race for a crown of leaves that will wither. But that we will run for a crown that will last forever. And so he's quoting scripture. He's quoting St. Paul immediately after winning the Super Bowl. And a lot of people who responded to it probably didn't get the reference. They probably thought he was referring to the eternal glory of being a Super Bowl MVP. and they immediately respond with things like, yeah, but did you see that penalty that they called that wasn't really a penalty? Did you see that? You guys cheated and all this stuff. And they completely missed the point that he's not talking about the Super Bowl. He's not talking about the glory of winning, even though it's the biggest football game of the year and in the world. He says his priority is different. This is not about that trophy. This is about doing it in such a way that God is glorified through it. And so I love that you have a story being told like this and someone using their social media to glorify God and let their own victory and their own success point right back to God before themselves.
That's Father Tim Grumbach here on Trending with Timory. We've tagged him on social media. You can find him on Instagram. Go follow me at Timory, TimmeriIe. And speaking of Instagram, while you are there, please go and watch the story I posted. It's this adorable video of a handful of altar boys who are working on ringing the bells of the church. It is so entertaining and joy-filled, so go check that out. Coming back, Father Tim Grumbach on Lord of the Rings and why we love friendship at the Super Bowl. This hour sponsored by Solidarity Healthshare. Join thousands of members who choose life through ethical and affordable healthcare. Call now to see how much you can save. 855-954-5688.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Failure, it's something we all experience at various points in our life, sometimes daily, but we handle it good, bad. What do you think? Well, let's talk about it in terms of the perspective of our Olympic athletes and how they handle failure, because they experience failure all the time. But what's different between them and us? Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit here on Trending. We're also going to talk about why people watch the Super Bowl and the significance behind that has to do with friendship. Joining me now is Father Tim Grumbach. He's the chaplain at Bishop Alamany High School in the Diocese of Los Angeles. Father Tim, I want to talk about Lord of the Rings. The new adaptation of Lord of the Rings coming out on Prime will be released this coming fall in September. I'm very excited. I'm hopeful. About a year ago, actually last February, news came out that it was expected to be a little dicey. In fact, over 55,000 people signed just one petition begging Prime not to make it essentially sexually explicit and sort of like some of the shows we've seen on HBO and even some of the shows such as, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name, Game of Thrones that we've seen. And so I want to get your thoughts on this. The preview came out during the Super Bowl, the teaser. It is fantastic. It does not look like the CGI is overdone, which I'm very grateful for. What are your thoughts leading into the upcoming Lord of the Rings release?
Yeah, that was definitely one of the biggest concerns coming from us Tolkien fans when we started hearing. I think they mentioned something about, like, they had even hired, and I hate this euphemism, an intimacy coordinator.
Wait,
and I think that, apparently that means someone who does the romance scenes, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And so they had hired an intimacy coordinator for the New Zealand set. That was what the word that got out. And so we were kind of expecting this to become a Game of Thrones kind of universe. And that was pretty frightening, especially not just in the sense of it being gory and violent in that way, but yes, worrying that there'd be sex scenes. And so thankfully, the showrunners themselves are already saying, no, we want this to be a show that everyone can watch. And, you know, with some in Hollywood, some in the film industry, they seem to want children to be watching the goriest stuff and the most sexual stuff. So, you know, I take that with a grain of salt. But what they seem to mean by that is we want this to be something that everyone can watch together. You know, children might have to cover their eyes for some scary moments, but, you know, what kind of story, you know, is Lord of the Rings without some of those scary moments? So it seems that we've at least dodged that bullet at the moment for this first season or so. We're really looking forward as Tolkien fans to, you know, we admit it's going to be an adaptation, and there are going to be some things that we are really excited to see on the screen, and other things that we'll be a little less excited to see. You know, some fans are terrified by the idea that they're creating characters for this show. Others are worried because they do have to condense thousands of years of story into a single timeline. So they've admitted they're going to do that. And one of the concerns there was, well, you know, if we're going to, you know, go 100 years between each episode, you're going to have characters that die out. And that doesn't make for good TV.
Right.
So they're going to condense a huge part of the history of Middle Earth. And it takes place in the Second Age. The Third Age is when, you know, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings and everything we're a little bit more familiar with was taking place. And so this is called the Rings of Power because it's when the rings are forged, not just the great ring of Sauron, but the rings that belong to the elves and the dwarves and the men. And so it's really going to be very exciting, kind of an adaptation of sorts of The Silmarillion, which is Tolkien's take on the history before The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And so that's kind of the nerdier part of it. I am no Tolkien expert, and I love the stories, but I know people who love them and know them better than I do. But
you're
this is going to be a really exciting
Elvish?
Few months. I think I have a couple of apps that could teach me how to do that, but I have, you know, I've been a little bit busy working on my Spanish and my Latin.
You mean it's not on Duolingo? I bet you it's probably on Duolingo at this point. And this used to be a total homeschool nerd thing, and I mean, not anymore. By the way, this is a total side note for any homeschooler who can laugh for just a moment. I met a homeschool prom king recently. Like, he actually was the prom king of a homeschool. I'm like, I've got to tell my mom this, because if you've ever seen, like, being in the homeschool world, of those memes where it shows like a homeschool dance, a homeschool homecoming or prom, and it's just really funny and nerdy. And I can say that I was a homeschooler, and I digress. But anyways, coming back, because there's such a tie-in, because as a culture, we've fallen in love with the stories of Lord of the Rings, and it's something that we've seen that is wholesome content, Father Tim, that anyone has been able to read, has been able to enjoy, and that's part of what we love. And sometimes that's what's hard when our favorite books or our favorite movies are remade, because one is the question, will it be wholesome enough for everyone to watch, and will I have to make the sacrifice to not watch? I can think of times, you know, where storylines that sounded so good because I love the fantasy fiction storyline so much, but so often they become really dicey to watch. You have to kind of give up some of those stories. Things such as Game of Thrones, which, by the way, Game of Thrones to begin with, the whole storyline is a problem. You and I have talked about that. But it means that we have to have a certain level of detachment when it comes to certain shows, that if it's problematic, we're willing to say, hey, no thanks. But the good news here with Lord of the Rings, Father Tim, is I think that we'll have a lot of freedom to enter into that magical fantasy world that Lord of the Rings is, and actually see heroic stories and stories, which, and this is what's so cool, stories that actually are representations of the story of Christ, although told in a completely different way, of sacrificial love, of dying for the sake of saving others and saving the world.
Right. And I can't recommend enough looking at the Silmarillion, looking at the stories that this series would be based off of, and understanding it as a myth that Tolkien came up with to complete the story, to complete the history leading up to the Lord of the Rings, but especially to go to the very beginning of it, where it is the creation myth. And I really, really do want to see if they touch on that, if they dare touch the story of creation of the world of Middle Earth. And you can hear the way that its creation is sung into being. I'd be so fascinated to see if they're brave enough to touch that story, where mm-hmm. you have a God figure who, a God who creates all things by inviting his, you know, his lower creation, I guess you could say, like these angelic beings, to help him in the act of creation. And it's really beautiful to see the way that, you know, he begins the song, they enter into it, but then you have this one of these angelic beings, if you will, Melkor, who begins to twist the song. And while this God sings it into being, like it's slow and it's calm and it's harmonious, but Melkor, this diabolical figure, begins to add like percussion and repetitiveness and disharmony, and the God allows it to happen, but then he stops it and he says, now you're going to see what this music looks like brought into creation. And so the God welcomes all of their songs into one song and then creates it so that they get to see and they get to be a part of. And so it's, you know, it's like secondary effects, you know, it's secondary creation effects. And it's so beautiful that Tolkien was able to do this. And he's not just retelling the Genesis story, but he's telling a myth that does tap into some of the realities of the Catholic understanding of creation and the beauty of creation, but also the fallenness of it. And so I'm really hoping that they're able to tap into that in some way in this series, if not, retelling it in a visual way, but at least to create a world that you can tell it's been created, but there's a fallenness that has taken place. And Tolkien himself, in a letter, says that's what this is a story about. There's a world that was created beautifully, but there's a fallenness that creates this tension, and it's the battle between the good and the evil within that tension.
You're inspiring me to read the Silmarillion because I've actually never read that part of Tolkien's work. It tends to be kind of the lost gem. And I know I have it, a beautiful copy of it from my husband sitting on our bookcase. So that will have to be a little bit of reading before the release of the show on Amazon Prime in September. I believe September 2nd. And this is where I think, Father Tim, let's talk a little bit about reading something over watching something. This is a challenge, especially if you love books. When your favorite stories come to the big screen, do you read it first? Do you read it again? You know, that expectation. I know for me, so often I have this world that I've created. You know, our imagination can run so far and become so vivid when we read, and then sometimes we see it on the screen, and although the adaptations can become fun, sometimes there's a little bit of a disappointment. And I find that fascinating, that we can become so disappointed when we've read something that we've loved for so long.
Right. And we're going to be comparing it to the Lord of the Rings movies, as well as comparing it to the images we have in our heads. And, you know, there is a warning about reading the Silmarillion, is that it doesn't read like Lord of the Rings does. It doesn't have the same kind of narrative flow to it. A lot of it is maybe a bit more poetic, a bit more mythological. And there are parts where he spends like chapters just describing the landscape. It's a very Tolkien thing.
Yeah, I have a hard time with Tolkien because of that. Sometimes I'll skip a couple paragraphs. I'm going to admit it.
So just be ready if you're looking to start reading it. It's there are parts that are a little bit more difficult like that. But it sets the framework for understanding the sacramental, you know, dare we use that word, worldview that is the Lord of the Rings. But just to get back to that comparison of, you know, reading and watching, is that, you know, the reading allows us to come up with our own images and not judge them. You know, we don't have to judge the images that we create. We just allow them to come, and when we dwell in that space. But then watching it, you know, there will be a lot more judgment that happens, like, oh, that's not what I thought it would look like, or even, you know, that's maybe even more than I thought it would look like. There's already one critique going around with just the most basic images that we just saw in the teaser trailer that aired during the Super Bowl, was looking at the island of Numenor, which is one of the first dwellings of man in that world. And it's grand and it's majestic, but it looks a little bit like some of the stuff that you would have seen in the Lord of the Rings. But Tolkien's whole vision was, what, even the most grand things we saw in that world of Lord of the Rings was like merely a shadow of the beauty of the world that we're supposed to see in the Rings of Power. And one of my favorite lines here, and I thought this was really profound, was describing the world that Tolkien had created for the Silmarillion, was that you get to it in the Lord of the Rings. And he says that their journey is not about confronting a new danger, but confronting an ancient one. But he says, Tolkien dreamed up whole kingdoms, then collapsed them for a background. And so he wrote the Lord of the Rings first, dreaming up the kingdoms that we encounter in Rings of Power, and just destroying them so that they're pretty much just ruins in the story that we know and we love best. But that makes this really exciting, is that now we're going to get to see what that world looked like, and hopefully with some glory and majesty, as best as this show can provide for us.
And doesn't that remind us of the fallenness of human nature, the glory of God's creation, and then how we handle it? Not to, you know, say, oh, humans are ruining the earth and the world, but to see that sometimes we miss the glory and the beauty of the creation God had in store, yes, for the plants and the animals, but also even more so for the human person ourselves. So that's your teaser leading into the latest of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings coming out on Prime this fall. That's when Father Tim Grumbach from Bishop Alemany High School, he's a chaplain there. You can follow him on social media. Go check out my Instagram where I posted this hilarious and adorable video on my story of these altar boys ringing the altar bells. It is fantastic. And you can also connect with Father Tim Grumbach there. We've tagged him on social media. I'll be right back talking about why you watch the Super Bowl and how it's more than just about the game, and also what's happening at the Olympics. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Lent is right around the corner, and we're going to start gearing up for that here at Relevant Radio as well as Trending. So take your Lent to the next level with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass. Free to you every day. Because you loved last year's in-depth walkthrough of the Mass, we produce even more new exclusive video content every day to enrich your passion for the Holy Mass. This premium edition video series goes even deeper behind the scenes from the moment you enter a chapel to the final blessings. From Ash Wednesday to Easter morning, illuminate your Lent with daily insights you can only find here right in your own inbox. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio, and we're going to come up talking a little bit about the Olympics, what's happening, and really this idea of failure and how we fail every day. Really, we do. We have little failures and we have little successes, usually every day. But how do we handle failure? We can learn a lot from our Olympic athletes. But first, I want to talk about the Super Bowl. Okay, I already admitted it. I didn't know who won the Super Bowl until like in half an hour before the show because I'm moving and packing. And I knew I was missing something. I wasn't just missing the game. I was missing the food. I'm so sad. I miss the Super Bowl food. But here's the reality. I was really thinking about it over the last couple of days, and I guess mourning my separation from the Super Bowl. Again, didn't care that much about the game, but what I realized is people, as a nation, we love the Super Bowl. And yes, it's about food. Yes, it's about a winning team, and sometimes about our team being there. And we love to join a winning team. We love to cheer and root on the underdog or the people who are guaranteed and expected to win. But what we really love about the Super Bowl is the quality time. The quality time with family and friends. And yes, that can send what brings us together is the food, is the team, is the game, perhaps is the halftime show and the commercials. All of those are benefits. But ultimately, what is it about? It's about the quality time. And it's a reminder to me that we actually really do need, as a society, to be better about thinking of reasons to get together. We don't have to wait for the Super Bowl or for 4th of July or Thanksgiving or Christmas. You can invite who you want, when you want, to do whatever you want with no reason other than the fact that you're seeking after people. We don't need the excuse of a Super Bowl to do something fun together. I think this enjoyment of the Super Bowl, again, comes back to quality time and that we have something that we can gather around. And so it's a challenge for us to create things to gather around with other people, especially moving to the Midwest over the last year and really knowing no one, having no friendships, relationships out here. It's been a challenge. And it's a reminder to me that, you know, if you want to make friendships, if you want to start to develop something, you have to find something to gather around. You can't just stand around waiting. You need to gather people together around something that they can come together in order to get to know each other instead of those awkward moments of face-to-face of, hey, my name's Timory. Hi, how are you? Where do you grow up? How many siblings do you have? What do you do for work? You know, we need more depth. We need something, a project to do together. And maybe that's you create a game night. Maybe you have a food night, a dessert night, a drink night, a debate night. If you're a nerd, I would love that. Can we have a debate night? That sounds like a lot of fun. I digress. Murder mystery party. I remember going to a murder mystery party years ago. It was so much fun. You can literally buy a box for a murder mystery and then go from there. You just have to usually have one person willing to host, knowing what's going on, who's who. But here's the deal. I was really thinking about this. And again, working on developing new friendships, especially as, you know, married person, a new mom, You don't have a lot of extra time, but this piece of information was extremely telling when I heard it from a guest of ours a couple weeks ago here on the show, and I dove a little bit into this report and the research from the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships. A professor of communication studies found in this journal that we have to invest time in order to develop certain types of relationships. So do you want to go from acquaintance to a casual friend? Well, you need at least 50 hours of quality invested time to take that from acquaintance to just a casual friend. Do you want more than a casual friend? Do you want this person to actually be considered to you and you to them a friend? You need 90 hours, research shows. But even more so, if you really want what most of us are seeking, that is close friendship, you need 200 hours of invested time. Now, for me, kind of makes me panic for a moment. I'm in a new state. I don't have that kind of time right now. But it's a reminder that people are worth it. People are worth investing in. And not just surface level, going deep, getting to know them so that you can build that trust. So that you can get to know each other's quirks and things you love and enjoy. This is why we actually have very few friendships. We may have a lot of connections. We may have a lot of followers. But they're not actual friends. And we as a society are parched for face-to-face contact. This is why we still love contact sports of football, getting together, because it puts us in touch with one another. It gives us an excuse to bring food, to chat, to go up. Maybe you've had more than enough food, but maybe you really want to talk to that person, and getting another wing or a carrot or a meatball or whatever you eat, breadsticks on Super Bowl day, can be your excuse of talking to that person. Let's be real, I think all of us really do experience some level of social awkwardness, lack of confidence, discomfort. You know, I am not the super outgoing individual. I can actually be pretty shy. I have to, you know, make sure, you know, get out there. I'm good when I know people and I'm comfortable, but we need reasons. You know, there's a reason why as a culture we tend to pick up our phone and absentmindedly check something because we feel awkward and we don't know what to do. So instead, stand up, walk up, and get another breadstick. Host a game night. Find something to come around so that you can enjoy that quality time that as a nation we thrive on when it comes to the Super Bowl. It's not really about the games and the teams, although it is. It's about the food. It's about the people. It's about that quality time and racking up those hours to take someone from an acquaintance to a casual friend, to a friend, but ultimately to a close friend. You see, we need, and I know personally, again, being in the Midwest in a new area, not really knowing anyone, we need the depth of relationships. And I can be pretty bad when it comes to relationships. I want depth. I want meat. I don't want it to just be surface level. I get bored. I want to have real conversations about ideas. Or I love a good game. I'm a total nerd. I love Catan Knights. Please, I would love to have a Catan Knight. If you are a Catan player, that is bomb. I love Canasta. Thinking and strategic games are a win in this house. We were actually just playing. What did we do for Valentine's Day? Let's see. What did we do? I made curry chicken, a Thai curry chicken. We made brownies, had brownies with fruit. And then we also played Canasta, which is a really fun card game if you have never played it. But it's a reminder, all of this, is that we are social creatures. We need social engagement. Don't wait for Thanksgiving, 4th of July. I guess Memorial Day would be the next event that people use as an excuse to get together. Don't wait that long. That's a long time. Oh, I'm sorry. I digress. I skipped Easter. But isn't it interesting that a lot of people don't celebrate Easter as a culture? I remember kind of realizing that Easter is so rarely celebrated by so many people as a nation. Maybe that's a good challenge and a reminder that we, as people of faith, glorifying our Lord and his resurrection, will celebrate Easter. Other people may care less, but you know what? The reason why they may come? They may come for that quality time. You can invite them and they can discover a greater mystery than they would ever realize. And this has always been a fascinating thing about Easter and Christmas. Having relatives and friends who end up being with us for these holidays, when we invite them to go to Mass with us on these holy days, they want to go because not only do they want to spend time with you in that quality time, not only do they want to gather around and have a reason to gather around, but they also want to know more what's behind the mystery of this day that makes you so willing to have a whole celebration around it. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Lots going on with the Olympics. We'll continue to discuss them throughout the week, especially very concerning. Again, I have referred to them, and many people are referring to them as a genocide Olympics. China never should have been allowed to host them. What they are doing to the Uyghur people, what they've done for years to the people in China with forced abortion, sterilization, until all of a sudden it's no longer a part of their agenda and anyone can have children, but now they've been living with forced abortion for years. And they have grown accustomed to abortion, and it's looked down upon to have, let's say, more than one girl. And this is a challenge for the culture that China itself created. But let's talk a minute about failure. Because many, and actually most of the Olympians, will actually experience some level of failure in their competing there at the Olympics. Now, I don't view it as failure. I think that anyone who can make it to the Olympics is extremely talented. But these Olympians, many years ago, got over the idea of participation awards. They have been tried. They have been tested. They compete. They have been injured. They have been rehabilitated. And they continue to fight to be their best, to be excellent as athletes. They have to experience failure. You and I experience failure really every day, moments in life. But how do we handle that? I think the Olympians can teach us a lot about honesty, integrity, and moving forward. Skier Michaela Schifrin has been fascinating to watch. She's a two-time Olympic champion, and she was expected to be a contender in this year's Olympics. Now, she shied off of course at the beginning of two of her races. In other words, she even actually recognizes that she has not been doing so well. In fact, she outright says she's failed. She says, it is failure. It's okay to say that. I'm okay with that, and I'm sorry for it. I feel so bad. She's apologizing to her fans. She goes on to say, but I also was trying, and I'm proud of that. I think it's really neat to see Michaela Schifrin recognizes, hey, I failed. I completely screwed up at the beginning of both of my first two races. But I was also trying, and I'm proud of that. She's not saying, hey, I deserve a participation award. She's saying, I'm proud of myself. I think that this is what we need to work on achieving in the face of our own failures. That we're willing and able to understand our effort, or even recognize, you know, I didn't put that much effort into it. Even doing what I do here on the show. You know, there are some days where it's like, yes, that was great. You know, kind of, you got to go through and you have to go, okay, yeah, I didn't say that well. Oh, I didn't pronounce that word very well. Or, hey, maybe that conversation didn't go that great. That's okay. That's good to acknowledge things. I think that's one thing I love about disconnecting from music and TV and text messaging all the time, because sometimes we have more time to process what's actually happening in our lives. You see, all of the noise, I love Cardinal Seurat's book on the dictatorship of noise. It's titled The Power of Silence, and he calls it, the subtitle's The Dictatorship of Noise, because we need that time to decompress, to debrief from our experiences. Sometimes even just visiting a friend or a family member. When you get in the car and you're driving home, instead of jumping right away to the stereo or to a podcast or to a phone call, or to text messaging, please don't text message on the road. I'm terrified of you on the road. I'll just say that. Instead of jumping to all of those things, think about how those conversations went. What were some of the highlights? What were some of the challenging moments for you? Did gossiping come up and you're like, oh boy, did you just fall down that rabbit hole? Or do you maybe compliment that person, move along, and change the subject? How did you feel when, you know, you had a really bad day at work and something happened that didn't go so well, but you can also look at the good moments, or that yesterday this is what you achieved or what you've been doing in your life? You see, this is how Michaela Schifrin and other Olympians have to look at things. They have to look at reality. They have to evaluate, adjust, and make changes to be honest with themselves and have the humility to do so, but not give up, to keep fighting. And it's okay to have some bad moments. It's okay to be frustrated, but you don't quit. And I think often we tend to quit in life. And that's what we have to overcome as a culture. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. I want to listen to a little bit of Michaela Schifrin's interview where she talks about, you know, she outright said, I failed, but I tried. And I'm proud of that. But then she goes on to talk about fan expectations and the support that she's experienced during the Olympics. Listen to this.
I would never have expected to feel in this moment, you know, severely underperforming in an Olympics. I would never have felt that humans could be so kind. And I never would have expected that. It's the most surprising thing of my Olympic experience is how kind people have been in the face of my failure. I mean, it is failure. It's okay to say that. I am okay with that. And I'm sorry for it, but I also was trying, and I'm proud of that.
I am so amazed by Michaela Schifrin's comments here. And the poor thing is cornered for like this 4-minute long interview. And at one point she's like, I'm just going to be quiet. Like, I'm just going to stop talking. But then this last 30, 45 seconds of the interview, she comes out and she's overwhelmed with the kindness and support of people, from fans to the Olympic team members, from the people she's surrounded by, that even in the face of what she says, it should be called failure. It was failure. Right out of the gate, the first two times she went completely off course. She had the humility to say that, but she also had the kindness, the gentleness, the beauty to say that other people have been so kind and generous to me. And even in the face of obvious failure, I can see the good. This is why taking moments to debrief, taking moments to process what we've experienced is so important, that we can see, yes, how we can do better, yes, how we failed, but how there are simple human interactions that can actually transform an experience from failure to actually seeing the kindness of others and the joy that that can actually bring our lives. Dr. Leonard Sachs wrote the book Boys Adrift, and he's joining me to discuss why so many boys and young men today are floundering. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. During our weekly Gentleman's Hour, we're going to discuss the challenges today for many young boys as well as young men. Everything from video games, yes, food, the culture we live in, and ADHD. Join me Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.